Good afternoon and welcome to today's forum, The Role of Contemporary Art Museums in the 21st Century. Delighted to welcome you to the Hirshhorn Museum. My name is Erica Clark. I'm the Associate Director for Program Partnerships here at the Hirshhorn Museum. And today's event, speaking of partnerships, is a three-way collaboration between the Embassy of Spain in Washington, D.C., which came to us with the idea of forming this event, the National Gallery of Art, and the Hirshhorn Museum and Sculpture Garden of the Smithsonian Institution. And for us at the Hirshhorn, this event reflects very much the expanding reach of the museum in terms of collaborations with many kinds of institutions, other museums, cultural agencies, embassies, even institutions that have supposedly nothing to do with the arts, but that contribute to contemporary perspectives on many issues that are reflected in the art that we show here. And I believe that today's event is really significant in terms of a kind of intensive self-evaluation that museums everywhere are undergoing, especially contemporary museums, which see themselves as educational resources, as public forums, and as a locus of contemporary creative output in many disciplines. And you'll hear a lot more about that this afternoon. I'd like to thank very much several people who made this event possible. First of all, Faya Kazi of the National Gallery of Art, head of... Right there. Faya is the head of academic programs in the educational division, in the education division of the National Gallery of Art, and her two associates, Ali Peel and Ben Masri Cohen. And of course, I'd like to thank Guillermo Corral, who's the cultural counselor with the Embassy of Spain here in Washington, and his associate, Francisco Tardio, who can't be with us right now. Also, Jessica Beck, our program associate at the Hirshhorn Museum, who made these logistics possible. And last, and certainly not least, Richard Koshalik, the director of the Hirshhorn Museum, under whose vision programs like this are also taking place. And now it's a delight to introduce our panelists. First, our moderator, Selma Holo, here to my immediate left. Selma is one of the nation's true authorities on museums, let me put it that way. She is the director of the International Museum Institute. She's the founder of, I think, the country's first program on museum studies at the University of Southern California. And she's director of the Fisher Museum of Art at the University of Southern California. Also, the author of a recent book that I encourage anyone who's interested in museums to look at, called Beyond the Turnstile, Making the Case for Museums and Sustainable Boundaries. It's a true contemporary resource for the meaning of museums today. Next, I'd like to introduce Manuel Borja, who is director of the Reina Sofia in Madrid, the former director of the Museum of Contemporary Art in Barcelona, MACBA, and before that, the director of the Tapies Foundation. And it's somehow appropriate to the contemporary nature of today's forum that the idea for it came from a BlackBerry message that Manuel sent to us. Thank you for coming here, Manuel. And next, I'd like to introduce Natalia Majluf, who is the director of the Museo de Arte de Lima, Peru, who comes to us from a very interesting context in terms of a museum whose facilities are provided by the government, but that is really a private organization. And I would say a word about the contrasting nature of the museums represented here. Selma with a university museum, longtime university association. Natalia with a public-private kind of hybrid. Manuel with a government organization in Spain, prominent one. And last and certainly not least, Richard Koshalik, director of the Hirshhorn Museum, founding director of the Museum of Contemporary Art in Los Angeles, a private museum. And here he is as part of the Smithsonian Institution because, as everyone knows, the Hirshhorn is one of the 19 Smithsonian museums. And so very much part of a government organization in a government capital. So with that, I'm pleased to turn it over to Selma Holo, and thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Erica. It's such a pleasure to welcome such a wonderful audience to our conversation today, an audience that is interested in the inquiry that we want to make, which is, in the title, simply the role of contemporary art museums in the 21st century. But in actuality, I think you got a sense from Erica's lovely introduction that it's a little bit more complex than that. There are museums that are solely contemporary art museums, and that might be what you would think we would be discussing. Manolo was the head of a solely contemporary art museum when he was at MACBA in Barcelona. Richard was the head of a solely and a founder and shaper of the Contemporary Art Museum in Los Angeles called MoCA. Both of them are now in more complex museums in that Manolo's museum, the Reina Sofia, the National Contemporary Museum of Spain, is both a modern and a contemporary museum. And the Hirshhorn itself is both a modern and a contemporary museum, which might suggest a certain amount of historicity playing with the contemporary. Natalia has been, for all of her working life, at a museum which incorporates historical objects that relate to Peru, and with an increasing emphasis on the contemporary. So, and then there are other kinds of museums that are dedicated in one way or another to the contemporary, such as monographic museums of living artists, such as the Tapies Museum that Manolo directed a number of years back. So we want you to know that when we're considering the notion of the future of contemporary art museums, that we're thinking in a broad, inclusive way, trying to range from the national museums that are of great size and great impact, all the way down to and including the living artist museums and everything in between. So that being said, I think that it sort of sets the stage for the question, which is, as I say, a larger one than we had first thought about. What we're going to do is have a series of questions and conversations. I am going to ask each of our panelists, Manolo, Natalia, and then Richard, to talk to us for about 5-6 minutes about what they think the role of the museum, and especially the contemporary art museum, in the context that I just described to you, the larger context, should be in the future. They will dance around, and I hope attack to some extent, the issues of what a museum is anyway, and then what it is that makes a contemporary museum as they think about the future of the museums themselves. Each of them will speak for about 5 or 6 minutes, and then we will entertain a couple of questions from the audience on that very question. So let's begin with that, and then you'll see where it'll take us with our mystery chairs and all. So Manolo, would you like to open the conversation for us, please?
Yeah, I'd like to open with two quotes, one by Gertrude Stein, the other one by Bullion Rubin. The one of Gertrude Stein is, as you know, a museum, when she said a museum can be a museum but cannot be contemporary, which is a contradiction because everybody is contemporary of its own time. I mean, you cannot help it. I mean, now, after lunch, we went to see the galleries, the rooms of the National Gallery, the areas of the 16th century, 17th century, and I didn't see anybody dressed in 17th century clothing. I mean, everybody was very contemporary. So that means that every museum, being dealing with living artists or with historical objects, is contemporary. So that's one point, which I would like to throw to the discussion later. Second, we cannot forget that the work of art has a kind of ambiguity. On the one hand, a work of art is historical, belongs to a certain moment. The paintings by Velázquez belong, or Zurbarán, to a certain historical moment, but then they have a life afterwards. They live like phantoms. They live in a life after their own life. And this ambiguity is something that we have to deal with. So that's the second point. Third point that I would like to throw to the discussion is another way of understanding contemporary, which is contemporary as opposed to modern. I mean, if we think about 20th century, clearly 20th century has two moments. One that has to do with the first half of the 20th century, which has to do with for this, it has to do with an idea of avant-garde as separated from society. It has to do with the idea of art that is always in the future. Modernity was always something, it was an unrealized project. And on the other hand, we know that since the late 50s until today, something changed. We moved from a society based on production to one based on consumption. We went to a society where the artist was marginal, to a society where the artist had a central role, where collecting, where museums were important. We went from a period where basically we were alone to a period where we are all together with other parts of the society. The problem is that maybe the company that we have is not the company that we wanted. The problem is that the museum art has now a role in society, but maybe it's not the role that we expected. Maybe it's a role that has to do more with market values, it has to do more with spectacle, it has to do more with alienation than really with education, with freedom, and with public sphere. So this is another issue of the term contemporary that I wanted to throw. Then the second quote, which this one is by William Rubin. In 74, in MoMA, he said, a museum cannot be infinitively expanded. For him, the museum, it was the white cube, that meant white walls, it meant a door to enter, a door to exit, and meant a kind of general light on the top. Of course, that was not a neutral space. Actually, he was thinking in a space that was the space of the aficionados, the space of the collectors, the space of the private people, the private collectors. We know also that both artists and the reality of society has contradicted all that profoundly. Artists from Marcel Brotars, Ligia Clark, Eliot Ithaca, Hans Hacke, has done just the opposite to think that the idea of a museum is not expandable. How can you do the Ligia Clark's therapy in a white cube? How can you do the parangole dance of Eliot Ithaca in that room? That means, and also the reality has changed that. We know that museums have become in a way like commercial malls. I mean, we know that museums, the use of museums has changed totally. So that brings me to the last point, which is the need to rethink, the need to think over the notion of museum as an institution. The museum is not something neutral. The museum is something that creates a content already. It's something that is a structure that predetermines what is in that structure. So which are the two models that we have for a museum of modern and contemporary art? On the one hand, we have the model of the Museum of Modern Art, which basically would be a model based in 3 points. The stories you tell, how you tell them, and to who you tell them. What were the stories that the Museum of Modern Art was telling? There was a story which was lineal, it was a story that was supposedly universal, homogenizing. You know, it's this story that we know that starts in France, ends in basically the States. On the other hand, what is the structure of intermediation? It's basically access, because if you are dealing with truths, that means that you don't need to do anything. People will immediately recognize this truth. So education is only based in access, in transmission, in giving those ideas to the public. And the idea of the public is basically the idea of somebody uniform, somebody passive, actually we are talking about audiences, somebody that comes there just to see what is given to them. On the other hand, we know that since the creation of Pompidou in 79, another model of museum has appeared, which is one that has to do with the contemporary situation, in which this triangle is changed. We don't have anymore one single narrative, big narrative, but we have a multiplicity of narratives. We have a multiplicity of narratives, but where everything goes. And that's also a problem because at the end, the container, the general idea somehow gives another unitarian view of art. On the other hand, we don't talk anymore about publics, we talk literally about audiences, about something that could be counted. And the structure of intermediation is not even transmission, is marketing, literally. And basically, you don't go to museums to know things. You go to museum to acknowledge things, to recognize things that in principle you believe that you already know. So in front of these two models, I would propose, and I will finish with that, a third model, a model where these narratives, these stories are multiple, a model where in which these stories, they are not giving only by one voice, but are giving also a model in which the one that hears, in a way like the narrator of Benjamin, also when he or she memorized the story, somehow created a structure of intermediation that allows for the other to speak, a structure of intermediation that somehow understands the museum like an archive, the archive in the sense of something that not only a place where you hold things, where you have you are proprietor of things, but a place where somehow it has some kind of hermeneutic competence, somehow a place where the categories, the way things are classified, are questioned and are being brought together by everybody, not only by a single view, a place where identity is not thought like in 19th century terms, linked to a big territory, but somehow identity is always in relationship. Identity is not a continent anymore, it's like an archipelago where one island gets the identity in relation to another island. And finally, a place where the people is never understood as a consumer or as something passive, somebody passive, but as an agent. Somebody that creates those stories. Somebody that is able to reconstruct those stories. So by that, the idea is that we'll have a model that will be alternative to these two models that we have inherited. And I will leave it for here.
Thank you very much, Manolo. Natalia.
Well, hello. Well, I like many of the things that Manolo has put forth. I'd like to go step back a minute and begin with one definition of what the museum is. If it is a museum, it's a place where we preserve collections for public access. That's a kind of very basic definition. And I would say it is therefore a place where we preserve, we don't preserve, but we put forth the possibility of constructing historical narratives, alternative historical narratives. And as we do so, museums are also places that have a very strong physicality, and this is always something I turn to. They're very firmly located in place. And they have I would speak of two physicalities, of the place where they stand and the kind of space they construct, because one of the things that museums do is they make time visible in a way that I don't think any other institution or medium does in such a stringent manner. And when objects enter a museum, they inevitably enter into a discourse that is charged with the notion of time. And I would say that this is one of the big challenges for the museum that attempts to incorporate the art of the present, the art, the most recent art. And it's what happens when contemporary art enters a museum, I think, is something very interesting, because it is immediately inserted in both a historical narrative or a multiplicity of, or the possibility of being inserted into one of many historical narratives, I should say. But also, it is inserted very stringently in the public sphere, and I think that this is something that museums do today that have always done in one way or another. And I think this is what museums should be doing in the future, because I think we tend to think of museums as kind of ideal places that are sort of sites of exception with relation to the market, to private interests. I mean, ideally, this is what museums should be. I tend to think that it's a nice ideal, but I don't think it's ever been true. And I think rather museums are places that permanently negotiate with private interests, mm-hmm. with different publics, and with market forces. And this is what museums need to do permanently, with one objective in mind, which I think is central, which is the possibility of creating a space for collective debate. And I think that once that space for public debate is ascertained, then you can, from there, really generate ways of negotiating with all these forces that are permanently in play. And I think this is what I'm trying to say, is museums are not apart from society, they're very much in society. So I think that in the end, what we have is, you know, museums serve as a place where objects are thrust into a web of historical discourse and public, a possibility of public engagement. And I think that in terms of contemporary art, this is a great challenge, because today what we have is an art scene that is immersed in the speculation of the market, of private interests more than ever, and museums can offer a different kind of place, and a place where reflection upon these factors is possible. And I think that's what we must value and preserve in the notion of the museum, even though the museum may change. And I think that what's interesting is the fact that museums are firmly placed in certain geographical locations, that museums are firmly established in place, does not mean that they need to speak only to the immediate physical community. Mm-hmm. But it does mean that it will generate very specific relations and dialogue with very specific publics. And what one museum does, no other museum can do in exactly the same way. And I think this is one of the wonders of museums, is each museum has its institutional problems, it has an agenda with the public, or their local immediate publics, be they physically, in physical close proximity, or be they in distant places. Globalization tends to generate that kind of network. But I've always thought that this physicality of museums, on the one hand, given that you need to keep objects in a place, I think that's a very basic premise, and their very particular political, economic organization and sustainability force them into very particular relations and allow them to generate very specific narratives. And this is, I think, what gives the world of museums such richness. Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you, Natalia.
Well, this is great. I mean, this is a subject that we're all discussing. This is a subject that's on the minds of not only people that are involved in museums, whether they're contemporary museums or historical museums. And the world, as you know, around us is changing. It's not only changing and affecting or having an impact on a large number of institutions, but most importantly on art museums, cultural institutions. We see a lot of trauma in the world right now. We've got the Philadelphia Orchestra declaring bankruptcy. We got the City Opera in New York having very great difficulty creatively, financially, and in terms of audience building and so on. And so this is a question that we have to discuss. I agree with Manuel, I agree with Natalia on what they were speaking about. I should say that for me personally, museums and the responsibility they have to collect work and to document what has been accomplished by the most creative individuals in our world over history, over a period of time, is critically important. Preserving that heritage, preserving that work over time is one of the critical functions for an institution. And the educational agenda, and there's maybe another word for it, but how the information about what happened and what these artists accomplished and getting it into the world, and that's even becoming more complicated now. It's a first-person experience within the museum, but it's also becoming more and more a digital experience and so on. But for me, the focus has really been, and what's important both in the history of art and also in contemporary museums, is the focus on the creative individual and the creative process. And when you visit a historical museum or contemporary museum, this focus on the creative process, which really is the spirit of inquiry that informs and drives both humanistic and artistic sort of pursuits in our life. And I think this is critically important. We cannot forget where these works came from. They're extremely important, they have to be cared for, but it's the artist, it's this creative process they went through, it's the world in which they lived and how that creative process changed is critically important. I think the other thing that's really important now that we cannot lose, we can talk a lot about museums and what they need to do, but it's this question of critical judgment. And I think what's happening in museums now, which we have to be very careful of, many museums are moving more towards entertainment. They're moving more towards being concerned about audience and attendance and how do you bring in more attendance to an institution. And my feeling is that the one thing they can never, ever give up on is this question of critical judgment. And what I mean by that is that the ability on the part of the staff, the ability through the education program with regard to the audiences, with regard to the press, is to be able to distinguish between quality and mediocrity. Critically important, I think, to distinguish between innovation and convention, and to distinguish between true originality and derivation. And we have to have this be part of our thought process. It has to be part of everything we do within a cultural institution. Now, what we're trying to do at the Hirshhorn, which is a modern and contemporary museum, is we are trying to create a more original institution. And by that I mean, we want this institution and everything it does to be as original as the works of art that we show, collect, and that we sort of respect or have great sort of admiration for within the institution. And we can talk about that later, but I think there are many ways in which now, today, you can create a much more original institution that really does connect to the work in a very different way. And so that's where we're going with the Hirshhorn, and I think that's where the future is, and we'll talk about that more in the future. I also think that you can no longer exist and build the wall around your institution. You can no longer exist in one city. I think you have to build a new level of connectivity globally. And you have to create a different kind of global conversation that does not only have art people talking to art people, but that you bring in the great thought leaders from around the world, and they start to also contribute to this dialogue, whether they be scientists, whether they be historians, whatever they might be. I think that the world is getting much more complicated, and I think that it cannot just be art people talking to art people. I think we got to expand the range and the reach of people involved in creative pursuits and talking about the works of art, in connecting them to other aspects of our society and so on. And that's one of the reasons for the bubble to a large extent, is to create this global conversation and working not just in collaboration with museums and other museums, although we'll do that, but it's also working with other kinds of organizations such as the Institute for Advanced Study at Princeton University, for example, and start to bring this dialogue, make it much more complex, make it have greater sort of depth, And I think by doing that, we're going to build larger audiences for institutions, and I think we're going to build larger audiences for institutions for the right reasons, not because we provide entertainment here, not because we're sort of putting out educational information that is sort of at a lower level in terms of its content and its meaning, but really on a much higher level. And we know there's 300 Biennales now in the world, if you can believe that. And I think we should all try to go to all 300, which would do something. But, and then there's art fairs, and I can't imagine how many art fairs there are around the world. So museums now have a much more serious, much more important role to play than ever before to elevate the dialogue and to elevate the appreciation for the great contributions of the creative people that have contributed both to history and are contributing today through the work they're being done today.
Thank you, Richard.
That's it.
What I'd like to do now is make a little bit of a comment myself on what we've heard and then ask for one very smart question from this very smart audience, and then I'm going to invite that very smart person up to sit with us and be a part of the panel. So if you're really scared, don't ask the question. But if you think you have something, but I do want to, there were a couple of things came to mind, to my mind, after hearing this conversation. One is that we can be talking about museums that hold contemporary art, which is a problem in itself, because one could say that once contemporary art even enters into the museum and enters into art history, it might stop being contemporary. It might start being part of a historical moment. I'll give you a very good quick example. In Los Angeles now, we have a show at MoCA, blessed memory, called Street Art. I think it's called Street Art Now, or Street Art. And you go into this exhibition, and you see what was out on the street and had a certain vitality and free zone of danger and excitement about it, whether you like it or not, in the street, captured in the museum, put on the walls, strangled as it were, and it becomes something, but it's not street art anymore. It's museum art that happens to have come from the street. And I think we need to just wrestle a little bit more. I just use that as one metaphor. There are a lot of ways we could look at this. But the issue of what contemporary art is, and I think, Manolo, you mentioned before, you can be a museum, but whether you can be a museum of contemporary art, whether or not these are possible. The second thing that Richard mentioned that I think is important is we're talking about the contemporary institution of the museum, which is different than talking about a contemporary art museum. How can museums reshape themselves to be contemporary institutions instead of just inherited institutions? And if you think of what Manolo said about art all being contemporary, it depends on, of course, its past and how it's wrestling with the future. I'll give you one example from a museum which is not a contemporary art museum, the Norton Simon Museum, yes, which has the most beautiful still life in the world in it by Zurbaran, whom you mentioned, the lemons, oranges, and a rose. And the way it's displayed is, for me, contemporary. Because when Mr. Simon had the opportunity to buy this painting from the Contini Bonacossi collection in the 70s, he found out that there were about 12 different versions of this painting around the world. And he decided if he was going to spend the $3 or $5 or $10 million or whatever it was, which was a lot of money at the time, that he wanted to be sure he had the unique, the original version, the one that showed that the artist had really done the authentic version. So what he did at the time, which was a very contemporary thing to do, was send around an x-ray machine to all the versions that existed and took x-rays of all the versions. In doing that, he discovered that every one of what turned out to be the versions was exactly the same underneath as it was on the surface. Only the one in the Norton Simon Museum that he ultimately bought from the Contini Bonacossi collection showed the artist's process underneath, showed the plate being moved to make a better composition, showed the oranges being fattened to become more glorious, showed the lemons being more dimpled to be more sexy. Mm-hmm. Only that piece showed the artist's process. And what made that a contemporary moment, I'm not saying it's a contemporary museum, but it made it a contemporary institution, was because I think to this day you can see those x-rays nearby and you yourself can understand what went on behind the scenes and the thought process of the purchasing of that. You can argue about whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's surely a contemporary moment.
Yes.
And so I would like to now ask whether any of what you've heard in the last 20 minutes or so has inspired you to ask a question about contemporary art in museums that are dedicated in one way or another to the contemporary museum, or the idea of the reconstruction of the museum as a more contemporary institution. Do I have any questions? I don't see any.
There's somebody.
I see one. Good. Would you please join us and ask the question from the stage? Yes, you
yes,
do.
And you have to stay up here.
Yes, because
even
you will be part of the
leave.
Conversation. One thing that we've been talking about secretly up here, while you've been probably listening through our microphones, is that we have as much to learn from you as you have to learn from us. So we'd like to put our money where our mouth is. Mm-hmm. What is your question?
There's a microphone right there.
Well, I'm kind of new to art museums. I'm an intern at the National Gallery of Art. And what I want to know
Which
is...
Which one? I never heard of it. Which one?
But I'm also an intern at natural history, so it's really a different kind of world. And I'm wondering about this this construct of contemporary, because it seems like modern came, and they were using it to describe a time. This is the modern stuff now. It's different from that old stuff.
Yeah.
And then contemporary came to differentiate it from the modern. And what kind of meaning does that have other than we continue to change, mm-hmm. and we continue to develop new kinds of art?
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. When I was at MoCA, which was a long time ago, we started to carry on a dialogue, not with contemporary museums, but with historical museums. And we started, the first one was the Uffizi in Florence. And we went to Florence and we had a whole series of meetings with the curators in Florence and at the Uffizi. And we wanted to build an exhibition, part of the exhibition program, to deal not only with contemporary art, but historical art. And to bring this all together, because I think contemporary museums, to a large extent, limit their range of function, or their range of interests to what might be defined as a contemporary period, which is 1945 to whatever, right? And so what we wanted to do is we wanted to see it as part of a longer history. And so we had talked about a show that had to do, they had one of the great collections of works on paper by Durer. And they have one of the great Durer scholars at the Uffizi. And we had a great interest in Joseph Beuys, and we had people who had a strong interest in Joseph Beuys. So the idea was to do a show with the Uffizi where we would show the work of Durer, and we'd show the work of Joseph Beuys, and then we'd have a critic from Joseph Beuys actually talk about Durer, and a critic of Durer to talk about Joseph Beuys. I actually believe that contemporary museums have limited themselves in a very small range of activity, and I think that we have to see ourselves as part of a longer art historical history, or a long story, a narrative. I'm always sort of uninterested in defining the word contemporary. To me, we can spend a lot of time on that, but I don't think we accomplish too much by doing that. And I think what we should be talking about is the long history of art and where contemporary art might fit there. I think when you support contemporary museums and contemporary art, it's a very conservative thing to do, because all what you're doing basically is building on history. It's a very conservative thing to do. And so I think that as we deal with this modern museum, there are shows coming up here that are thematic, and you're going to start to see us reaching back into history, not just being dealing with the present, but also looking to the future. And if we can do that, this becomes a very different kind of contemporary museum, and nobody will worry about how we define contemporary.
Natalia, and then Manola.
I have a
great question, by the way.
Well, and I've seen exhibitions that bring together, let's say, historic art, to call it something, with current or recent. This is with current or recent works, and I find that that generates something that is very interesting. But I wouldn't place that at the center of my personal concern or interest, with regard with the way in which the present and the past can enter into dialogue. One of the things I believe is that contemporary art gives us issues that are pertinent to our time, pertinent to us in the present. And what is interesting is when you look back into history with those questions in mind. So I can think of ways in which history can be rewritten based on those concerns of the present. This is something that historians always talk about, how the history is always built from the present. But I think in terms of art history, it is fascinating the way one can look back and find new ways of reading older art, but also new, finding objects that have heretofore not been studied sufficiently or have not been found to be interesting and how they sort of come to life. And I think that's the dialogue that I'm interested in personally. So for example, I can speak from my own experience, the building of the contemporary art collection at the museum I work in has contributed greatly to writing a very different history of approving art of the 20th century, and even of rethinking certain aspects of 19th century Peruvian art. And I think that is something that makes collection building and makes museum work very vital and very pertinent to the present. That's how I like to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd like to point something else. I think the difference between modern and contemporary is not a difference of content. It's not a difference of recent art versus all art or historical art. As I said before, I think everything is contemporary, you just cannot help it. I think we have to place a different question. It's not if we are dealing with living artists or with dead artists. I think the question is in which place is art practice, curatorial practice today in relation to where it was some years ago. If we compare what the place where art practice is today in relation to what it was at the beginning of the 20th century, we could see that there is a big displacement. Mm-hmm. You could see that art practice is not outside of society anymore, is in society anymore. And then you realize that our own practice, being dealing with quote-unquote contemporary art or historical art, is right in the middle of society. And we could see that the society where we live is dominated, is structured around spectacle, around consumption, around market. So in that sense, I think it's really important to question modern versus contemporary. It's important to maybe think that we have a past. I mean, during many years, modernity was based in believing there was no past. Mm-hmm. There was a desire to do a rupture with history. We actually have a past, not only a faraway past with Baroque history, etc., etc., but a past in that is our modernity. Modernity is our own past, and it's a past that maybe is unrealized. It's a past that maybe didn't deliver, or in which we don't recognize ourselves. Mm-hmm. So in a way, we are trapped between two categories, between two walls, two aspects. One in which we don't recognize ourselves, which is the past, and another one that we don't like, which is the present. So in that situation, I think we have an ethical and moral obligation to look for different models. In addition, it's clearly that we live in a systemic crisis. We live in a period of structural crisis. That's very clear in economy. And museums are not different of that. I mean, you could see many of the experiences of museums, many of those branding museums, in a way, they are failing. So I think, and also we know that in periods where everything goes okay, which are periods like, just to put a metaphor, it's like when you go in a car and you go uphill. I mean, it's very difficult to make a change because, you go, I mean, things go up. But when you go down, and definitively we are going down, a small shift of the wheel, it can make a big change in the direction you are taking. And of course, museums are both central and very fragile structures. They are central because knowledge aesthetic experience is central in a society that doesn't produce, in a society that consumes, is really central, and we are fragile because we are not strong. I mean, the trustees, the people that has money are the one that, the market, the private people is the one that is strong. However, we have this ethical obligation and this opportunity to make a change. And I think in this sense, the discussion between contemporary and modern, it makes sense, but not in, you know, in just a kind of dialectic between what is old and what is new, but in the sense of recognizing where we are, what is the place of art and art practice today, and realizing that the place is not the place that was before, and maybe it's not a place that we like that much.
I just want to add one short thing. We always think that we have to collaborate with an institution, say in Washington, and an institution in another city somewhere in the world. And I think if you look at certain cities like Washington, D.C., there are multiple museums. And I actually learned this from John Cage, because we did an exhibition of the work of John Cage, and I won't go into it. But when he came to Los Angeles, he looked at all the museums in the city of Los Angeles. And he put together a show where he selected major works. He asked each museum director of each museum in Los Angeles, what were five of the most important works in your collection? And then he put together a show of that. And I think what we've got in certain cities like Washington, New York, Los Angeles to a certain degree, we have a range of museums that are dealing with very different periods of history. And there is a lot of collaboration that can happen between the Hirshhorn and the Phillips, or the Hirshhorn and the National Gallery. So what this city has, in a way, is one museum. And it's made up of different other institutions. And I think by bringing those institutions together, and I think this could be the subject of another dialogue or session, and talk about where the collaboration could be across disciplines, across historical boundaries and historical periods, and to start talking about how these institutions in this city could collaborate to create a new kind of exhibition right here within the city of Washington. So in Washington, maybe to a certain degree, we have one museum. And I like this idea very much, because there's expertise in each of these institutions, and that dialogue could be damn interesting if we could get that dialogue to happen for the general public and also for each institution.
I think what you say is important. We still have, and we could see in many of our colleagues, we were speaking about that this morning in the seminar, this obsession by having one work by every single artist. Yeah. And we can see this tendency of many museums to be alike. I mean, everybody likes to have this work, this other work, this other work. And that comes of this old idea of totality. This idea that culture is something that could be put together as a totality. I mean, this kind of 18th century idea. We know this is impossible. Mm-hmm. We know the world has become very big. Yes. And we know knowledge is always fragmentary. Yeah. And that fragmentary thing is important in two ways. One, because it's more democratic. One, because it enriches us, because when something is fragmentary, it means that we need the other. That means that not only the museum is a place of representation, it's a place of negotiation. It's a place where you speak, but you hear. You learn while you are speaking, but you learn when you are hearing the other. Mm-hmm. And that means something else. It means that if traditional museums have been always associated to a building, and this is a tendency today, even in a perverse way, where new museums, they are not only associated to a building, they are associated to a name of an architect. And actually what is important is the building, and the program becomes irrelevant. I mean, we also know museums where they have a building and they have no collection, or they have not even money to run later on the program. So I think we should abandon in a way this kind of 19th century idea of the museum linked with the building, and we should think in terms of cities.
Yes, I agree.
And a city, and we should think in terms of this kind of 19th century bourgeois city that used to be a place composed of different places, mm-hmm. a place composed of different heterotopias instead of a utopia, a place where you have different places and they antagonize. And you could have them all, of course, where the presidents, the Queen, everybody could come, but you could have a red light district, and they could antagonize. Mm-hmm. And the red light district could be a very democratic place. It could be a place where other things could happen. And if we manage to do that, I think we are enriching ourselves. I think we are strengthening the museum, a new form of museum, and a new form of cultural practice.
I agree. I think, and I'll stop now, but I think that when we have dialogue with other institutions, and I'm talking about our staff, myself included, we tend to talk about contemporary, we tend to dialogue with contemporary mm-hmm. and modern curators in other institutions. And we very seldom have a dialogue or have a discussion with the curator of European painting or the curator of Renaissance material. And I think there is so much to be gained by having those kind of informal discussions going forward, so that it's a much more rich historical discussion and agenda that can follow in both institutions or in all institutions within a city mm-hmm. or beyond.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Go ahead. I think that innovative spirit that contemporary kind of embodies is really seen throughout history, but people kind of forget about it because you're not an expert in that field per se. You're in contemporary paintings. But you don't see, say, the graffiti that monks put in their illuminated manuscripts mm-hmm. that is just as contemporary and odd.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And this is where I think museums really can make a really extraordinary contribution to rewriting history, rewriting the history of art, and having it be much more comprehensive and much more enlightening, I think, to the general public.
Now,
just one thing. Yeah. One of the things that strikes me is we speak of globalization, we speak about partnerships,
yes.
we speak of the need to generate connections between institutions, and at the same time, the structure of our museums does not really allow that.
That's
I mean,
right.
I think it's even requesting a loan is an ordeal in some cases, and we still have a very much of a proprietary notion of collecting and of collections, and I wonder whether in the future collectively held collections might be one of the ways to go in generating possibility of both generating a sense of specialization, which I think is indispensable, especially today that the world has exploded, and at the same time being able to be inclusive and not parochial, because mm-hmm. the great challenge to local collections, which is how I would define the collection of my museum, mm-hmm. Which is not my museum's mission,
yes.
In general, is that it needs to be specialized if it's going to be of any interest.
Yes.
But at the same time, that involves a danger of a certain parochialism. Mm-hmm. So I think that this is something that we need to rethink, is how museums are going to be able to generate a true channels of exchange.
Exactly.
I think that's a challenge.
And I think it goes back to leadership, and I think there's a question about when you talk about institutional leadership, I think, and this goes to boards of directors, this goes to directors in institutions, and so forth. We tend to want to look. I think we tend to want to look for leaders that, first of all, are concerned about control, balancing the budget, whatever. These things are all very important, but I think we have to look more for leaders that have a vision and are visionary with regard to the institution. And I think we have to look for leaders that aren't just problem solvers, but opportunity seekers. And this is what's missing in searches for heads of major institutions around the world. We look for problem solvers, we look for people that are going to manage that institution, but not necessarily lead it and not necessarily look for opportunities. And so I think we need, and to follow up on what you're saying, if this is all going to change, we need to look for more leaders of institutions who are also opportunity seekers.
Well, that means that leaders who are willing to take risks.
Right.
And that's not necessarily the easiest thing to do, but it's probably necessary. And given this conversation, I'd like to ask one more question of the audience and then one more question of our panels. Here we're talking about these wonderful theories of a museum being a place where in the future or in the present or in the contemporary idea of a museum that we begin to have and accept the idea of a fragmentary experience, of multiple narratives, of not being a passive audience but necessarily being a part of the conversation. Do any of you, when you visit museums today, have that vital, dynamic, relational experience with a museum? Could you come up and talk to us, please?
So first of all, I'd like to present myself. I'm from Venezuela, but I'm 25, and up to now I have lived in 4 countries, and I have lived in DC, Paris. I go often to New York, and currently I live in Montreal. And I've been able to see museums and a huge spectrum. And for me, the one that I feel more distant is contemporary art. I just find that, like, I've studied art history in my school in Venezuela, that's important. And we end up until modern, around like Van Gogh, well, or post-impressionist Van Gogh or Dali and things like that. And then there's a stop, and we are not knowledgeable about contemporary art. Any time that I go to a museum or I'm gonna travel, I wanna see exactly the paintings that I already know or heard of. If I'm gonna go to Spain, I definitely wanna go to the Dalí Museum and things like that. And I just feel that contemporary art is undervalued, and especially today with marketing and everything is disposable. Right now, we decorate our apartments constantly, maybe every 2 years or so, even per season. And that includes rotating paintings for art collectors. So at the end, everything is going so quick for us, and I find that probably contemporary art today, not the modern that was before, that the world was in a slower pace. Today, there's so many art. I'm sure there's great things, but people, young people like me, were not knowledgeable of that, and therefore we cannot really value it.
Would anyone like to respond to that on the panel? Manolo.
I think this is that the old art or art from the past goes slower. That's a perception of today. I mean, if you see Dalí, the one you mentioned, in the mornings, at one moment, during the morning he was realistic, in the afternoon he was cubist, and in the evening he was surrealistic, so that's really quick. So I think this is a perception that we have, because somehow a perspective gives us distance and time selects things. But I think, things go as quickly as before. The only thing, the world has become much bigger. I mean, if you see the area in Paris where Mallarmé and the friends of Mallarmé used to live, I mean, it was 2 streets and two blocks. I mean, it was really, really small. In that small space, they were working very, very quickly, very hard, but it was small. Today you have this speed, but globally. So, but I think what is important with that you mentioned is a kind of contradiction. On the one hand, you mentioned that we do not feel related to contemporary art in a way, that it's difficult, that we don't understand it. And being in a museum, if you see the reports of the commentaries of the people to the museum, actually that could be a perception. I mean, we all have received letters when you do a very contemporary show like, "Sir, you should be dead," or "Sir, you should resign," or things like that, to say the least. However, more and more people go to the museum. I mean, the museums. However, all museums dealing with old art, British Museum, Louvre, Prado, they're obsessed with dealing with contemporary art. Why is that? One is because contemporary art is sexy. One is because contemporary art, because there is a market, because there is lots of interest in contemporary art. There's lots of communication tools around contemporary art, so that attracts lots of people. But at the same time, we have put all of our strength in communication, in marketing, in labeling, but not in education. So, and I think this contradiction is something that is very problematic, and I think we should address it. And I think we should address it not only in curatorial terms, not only in artistic terms, but also, and that goes back to the last comments before, in administrative terms, in legal terms, unless we do changes that also implies legal, kind of small legal or big legal revolution, it will be very difficult, because as you mentioned, we all talk about the fact that the others should speak. We all talk about the fact that history is global, but the truth is that in the case of Latin America, many works of art are being bought in Latin America, they are brought to Europe and the States, but they are not released, they are not sent back to Latin America when works exhibitions are needed. So I think we should start thinking that maybe the idea of property, maybe this idea that museums that we have, that we own the works of art, is not right. The same way that we were upset with when the Taliban bombed the Buddhas, because the Buddhas belong to everybody. The same way that we would not accept that, for example, some crazy guy bombs the pyramids of Egypt, because it belongs to everybody. I think we should realize that culture, art, belongs to everybody. A museum is only a custodian, and as a custodian, it has no right to deprive the other to write their own history. And we know, being in a museum, that you make the laws, but the laws, they are never neutral. I'm part now of this Bissau group, where the big museums are part of National Gallery, Metropolitan, Prado, Reina, Louvre, etc., etc. And it's very curious now that we are in crisis and that we cannot spend so much money in air conditioning, in certain types of things. Now, suddenly, the research department of all those museums, they have discovered that the same rules that a few years ago apply, the rules where you have to be very strict in terms of conditions of humidity, of climate control, maybe you could be a little bit more relaxed. So that gives an idea how we really have to think how we behave, how we work, and not only in curatorial terms, but also in administrative and in legal terms.
Well, as we said, Manolo, a crisis is a terrible thing to waste, and we are in one, and it's good to be creative in that. Would you like to add something?
Oh, sorry. I just think administratively it's really problematic, because that same sense of ownership makes everybody who works in the museum want to take better care of those objects, and they try really hard to come up with standards, like you mentioned, for the the humidity and all that kind of thing, and that is very important, but there's still a growing professionalization in the museum world where we're still trying to figure out how we do these things and how we this kind of thing.
Well, contradictions are going to lead us forward, I suppose. I'd like to take this opportunity, because we don't have too much time left, to just pose one more topic for conversation, and it's something that Natalia hinted at, but I think we have to deal with the fact that we are in an increasingly globalized world. It's not the first time the world's been globalized. Certainly in the age of the Spanish conquest and in history, we've had so much contact. But right now, between the internet and real travel, we are really in a very globalized situation. And I remember something that you wrote, Manolo, a while back, when you had, I think, just taken the job at the Reina Sofia, and you talked about how unfortunate it would be if museums, in thinking about globalization, were all to be, in a way, like mirrors of MoMA at the time, or trying to be in that model. And you talked about how it would be important for each museum, by virtue of its history, its interests, its current life, its past life, its taste, to be able to create a place where if people were to come to see, and they will because we're living in the globalized environment, they would learn something that was special to that museum. Could you talk about that a little bit, and could we all a bit?
Actually, it's sad to try to be a mirror of somebody else. It's even sadder to try to be a mirror of yourself. Mm-hmm. So to be a mirror of MoMA, MoMA trying to be a mirror of itself, it could be even more problematic. But it's true that today the big problem is global versus local. I think we all agree that this kind of clone museums make no sense. I mean, it's just like going to, I mean, and we could see it actually. You mentioned 300 biennials. The problem is the 300 biennials that look like the 300 fairs.
That's
right.
Is
when you go to see the works at Basel, at Venice, and then you buy them at Basel, when there is no difference between private and public. So I think it's very important. So that's one problem. Another problem is the other side of the coin. When you try to be localist, mm-hmm. when you try mm-hmm. to have a fixed identity, when you try to create your own canon yeah. as the antithesis of the universal canon. So I think we have to think identity, but in terms of flux, in terms of relationship, in terms always of the other. So that means building a story that makes sense in your own mm-hmm. place, but it's a story that by, or a set of stories that by making sense in your own place, in a way gives light to the others. And I think this is what mm-hmm. museums should attempt mm-hmm. at this mm-hmm. moment. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Natalia, you want to say something about that?
Well, I think that we're all very convinced that there's been a decentering of the art world, and that, I mean, I don't think anybody could write a book titled How X City Stole the Idea of Art, like Serge Guibord wrote How New York Stole the Idea of Modern Art, for example, where it was clearly the passage of, you know, Paris as the art capital of the world to New York as the art capital of the world. I think that the notion that there is one art capital has long disappeared from scene. What we have is multiple art capitals, however, and though they are decentered, they are all still firmly localized in Europe and North America. So I wonder what this decentering means. It is true that alternative narratives of modern and contemporary art have emerged to contest the sort of canonical modernist story, and it is true that you have museums buying artists from all over the world, museums in central capitals, in, you know, the big art capitals are buying works produced in Africa and in Asia and Latin America. But I'm not so certain that this has produced a true decentering mm-hmm. of both the sites of power in the art world mm-hmm. or of who has actually the power to develop certain narratives. And I think that that's interesting because we are in a much more inclusive world. I remember when I started studying Latin American art, which wasn't that long ago, I mean, and I was a stranger. I mean, in art history departments in the United States, people looked at me funny. That doesn't happen, of course, today. But I don't think that we are in a situation where the stories have changed that much. Mm-hmm. If you look at what is published, people are still trying to build the grand narrative. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's pretty much impossible to build grand narratives today. I mean, I really feel for curators of big central museums like MoMA or Tate or Reina, for example, when they need to, no matter what kind of take they might have, they are still called upon to be somehow mm-hmm. international museums. Mm-hmm. How you do that, I have to admit, I don't have a clue. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it would be possible. Mm-hmm. Even if you assume the position that Manolo assumes and proposes, which mm-hmm. I think is perfectly valid, of admitting that we have fragmentary stories to tell. Mm-hmm. But if still your purview is potentially the world, I think you're in big trouble. And I think this is the big crisis that we still don't know how to cater to.
Richard.
I think there are ways of sort of dealing with the concerns you have. And Carrie and the curatorial staff here in discussions, we're actually thinking of building a two-part curatorial staff. We've just added to the curatorial staff some very, very brilliant people who have had great experience and they've joined our staff. But we're also thinking of building an international curatorial network of individuals around the world that won't be here, but will be in different parts of the world, but that will provide us with intelligence, what's happening in Asia, what's happening in Latin America, what's happening in Europe, and then bring them to Washington maybe four times a year to have a discussion about what they've seen, what's of merit, how the institutions are changing, what can be the connections between this institution and other institutions, what other artists in the world we should be looking at who are doing groundbreaking work, and start to make a different kind of connection. I think museums have built curatorial staffs that have sort of been too close, talking to themselves, and not had the ability, because of travel funds, lack of travel funds, to actually travel as much in the world as they maybe should. But I think if we have this international think tank of curators, and they could rotate every 5 years, and they would bring us information, and they could discuss that with our curatorial staff, we might have a chance to find new ideas where we can connect the world to a much greater extent.
I think to answer your question to Reina Sofia, I would like to mention two things. One, that is true that the former center of Paris, New York, is not that doesn't exist a center anymore. The only thing that exists a diffuse center.
Yes.
The new center is something between London, Shanghai, Basel, which is very close to market, to spectacle, to certain to buildings with brand name, architects, etc., etc., all those things that we know. So which one it could be the alternative? The alternative, it has to be something rooted locally. And that locally it has to be understood in a sense not self-closed but open, and that's possible. And I'll give you an example of how, maybe wrong, but how we are trying to do it in Reina Sofia. The collection of Reina Sofia is local, is the history of Spanish art, more or less, of in the 20th century. But it's a local history that at the same is open to the other. So for example, we choose three moments in our collection that are key moments. One, because we have Guernica, is the 30s. So the 30s, 36, 39 is extremely local. I mean, we have a civil war. You cannot be more local than that when brothers kill each other. But also it's a moment that is absolutely international. Civil war, it was a model of what it would happen. Civil war and the all the period of the Republic is a moment of big changes. It's the first postmodern period, is the modern where photograph, cinema is very important, is the moment of political commitment of many artists. And that is, again, very specific, but at the same time, talks to other people. And at the same time, is historical, but makes lots of sense today. So that's one period. Another period, which is extremely local, is the transition from in the democratic transition in Spain, which actually started before Franco died, in the late 60s until the late 70s. That period, which is very important for us, locally very intense, is at the same time very international, if you know how to do it, because it's the moment of feminism, May 68, big changes politically, artistically, all over the world. So somehow you manage to build the bridge between something which is extremely local and something which is international, that means local, open to the other, I think you manage to do something. And then you are questioning not only these former centers, Paris, New York, this lineal history, but you are also questioning this diffuse center that you have today.
Now I'd like to ask the audience, when you enter a contemporary art museum or a museum that has contemporary art, what are you looking for? Are you looking for a general history, a full rounded narrative that answers questions, or are you looking for multiple stories or the fragmentation or something that has both a very strong sense of the local but yet an understanding of the global? Have you thought about that? Yes. Please come up. Yes.
There are more chairs.
And there was somebody, you had a question too, right?
Yeah. Well, you can come up. There's one
come
more
up,
chair. You can
come
be
up
next.
And join us right now.
I need to tell you, we have very little time. We have about 10 minutes before we actually have to say goodbye, so we can ask both questions.
We want company up here.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello.
I come to this as an educator and art historian who used to teach college art history, you know, chronology and so on. I'm a medievalist by training. But I now teach, well, I run a nonprofit, so I spend a lot of teaching on the side, adults, at the Smithsonian, Elder Hostel, and I don't want to teach them art history in the standard way. We're more talking about what's beauty and what was important in this painting and why, what were artists thinking. And when I'm listening to the conversation, I'm listening to museum directors talk to museum directors about keeping museums alive. As an educator and someone dealing with both young people in art history, but older people for whom art history is not important, the question I have when I go into a contemporary museum is, what can I take away from this? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us go in expecting to find things we won't understand, but that we know are good for us. And I think it's very important for a museum to be different from a gallery. A commercial gallery. Okay. You go in, you want to be surprised. You want to see stuff you don't understand, and then you leave. Mm-hmm. But to me, the educational mission of a museum is so critical. We live in a visual culture more so than ever. It's as much as the Middle Ages, a visual culture where people are essentially illiterate. And images play such an important role with TV and computer that it seems to me a contemporary art museum's role is really to help us better use our eyes. And I love your idea of, you know, to me, and I do this all the time, put a contemporary painting up and put a medieval icon up and then put a prehistoric picture up and make people just look at it for half an hour. Mm-hmm. And I think the experience is you can come away from contemporary art not thinking it's about something you have to like, but a way of looking. And so I would just encourage your kind of thinking. I think if we can make people want to go to the museum to see Renaissance next to contemporary, next to prehistoric, mm-hmm. that it would be a different way of redefining the role mm-hmm. of the museum mm-hmm. rather than maintaining its mm-hmm. existence.
And I agree with you, and in certain situations that can happen. When you see the major historical museums, they separate this work out, and the 13th, 14th century Italian painting is on one floor and so on, so on, so on. But my feeling is, and I've always believed this, that if you really truly understand the artistic achievements of the most creative, brilliant artists of the past and the present, it will also help you better understand your own unique creative potential. And that's one of the reasons I think museums exist. And somehow we have trouble getting that message across. Because I think when somebody comes to the museum, yes, you can learn a lot about the Renaissance. That's not a bad thing. You can learn a lot about this work and how it was produced and made and its history and so on. But it has another, for me, higher purpose, and that is to encourage and help you understand, as an individual, your own unique creative potential. Then the museum will succeed, and then people will be able to live life with greater imagination going forward. And that's the purpose of museums from my point of view. Now, I know they have other responsibilities, conserving the collection and so on and so on and so on. So there's something there, I think, that's very important for the general public to have this broader view of the world of art. Great question.
People say to me, if you can make people feel smarter, and, you know, if you give them a good lecture that doesn't give them information but allows them to find it.
Yes.
And that's what, in my view, a good museum does. You come out feeling smarter.
So yes. By extension, more creative.
Yourself.
That's wonderful. Thank you.
Yes, I do not come from the museum world, but I heard twice the word risk-taking. And for me, risk-taking is the sort of the oxygen of keeping the things moving forward.
Yes.
So I wanted to just question here, what does it, in terms of museum, mean risk-taking? And what is the risk-taking that will move it forward. What does it mean, risk taking, for someone who has no idea what to take risks within a museum is? What does it mean to take risks?
I want to say that we have the biggest risk taker in museums sitting right to my left.
Perfect.
So nobody
then I would love to know what it means, you
except
know, to take the risks.
Him.
Well, it's a number of things. First of all, I think that leadership...
And what is killing that risk-taking?
Yes,
great.
Exactly. I think it's a number of things. I think it's, first of all, there has to be a certain amount of... There has to be a certain fearlessness within the institution in terms of how it sets its agenda for the future. Second of all, I think you have to listen, if you're a contemporary museum, to the artist and what they think is important and the risks they want to take, and to become to a certain degree a patron of that risk and that new venture, that new initiative on the part of the artist. And it's also, it's about ideas. Now I can give you some, just two or three examples here at the Hirsch one. We are going to be redoing our bookstore. I know you all love the bookstore in the lobby, and you're going to not like me for moving it and getting rid of it from the lobby. I'm joking there. But we're going to move it downstairs, but we commissioned an artist named Barbara Kruger, whose work you maybe know, and she's going to be doing the lower lobby. She's going to be doing the ceiling, the floor, all the walls, and the bookstore. And it's going to have content, artistic content, that has merit. Now, we will then try to accession that bookstore into the permanent collection of the museum. That's taking a risk. We'll have the first museum in the country, to a large extent, that has its bookstore in the permanent collection of the museum. And so it's really following the instincts of the artist, it's staying close to the artist, it's taking risks with them, but it's also looking for ideas that will enhance the museum environment and build a different kind of museum, a much more original institution, as I say. So risk-taking within institutions. Now, it's a little bit complicated. I mean, I'm part of the Smithsonian Institution. It tends to be risk-averse, so we have to overcome something there. We are part of, we have a board of directors, and except for few, one of them's here today, Danny. Many boards are not really, truly comfortable with institutional risk-taking, but it really has to do with the director of the institution, the curators of the institution, and a willingness to take those kind of risks. And if you don't, I really, truly believe the institution is going to stagnate. I think the institution is going to be like other institutions, and there's going to be a conformity of institutions across the country that I would find, and I think most people today are finding, to be quite boring. So risk-taking is critical. In business, risk-taking is part of the process. It's how they live. You know, if you and all other endeavors, but museums have been conservative and been risk-averse to a large extent.
Curiosity. What is the biggest risk-taking in a museum that has paid off, you know, big risk-taking, and everyone in
the... Oh, I can give you a million things. I mean, we Kerry Brower, about part of the was at MoCA at the time, and also he did it here. We bought a collection of work from a man named Count Giuseppe Ponza di Biumo. We bought 11 Rauschenberg combines. We bought something like 7 Rothkos, 14 Kleins. I can give you a long list of what we bought. The price at the time was $10 million. When we did that, we had absolutely no money in the bank. We were founding an institution. We had $50,000 in the bank, and we made a deal to buy a collection worth $10 million, which is now worth maybe a billion. I don't know what it is. But we made that decision to do that. It was a very, very, very difficult decision to make because we didn't have the money. And I can remember once the decision was made, I got a call from Carter Brown. And he said, Richard, where the hell did your institution find $10 million to buy that collection from Count Ponza? And I said, we don't have $10 million. We have $50,000 in the bank, but we have an agreement where we'll pay it out over 5 years, $2 million a year, and we'll try to make it, right? And we made it. And I think that kind of risk-taking, we at MoCA, we acquired in the permanent collection, it was offered to the Museum of Modern Art by Virginia Dewan, double negative, the big earthwork, big as the Empire State Building in Nevada. Nevada. We were offered, it was offered to MoMA, MoMA turned it down. It was offered to us at MoCA, we took it into the permanent collection. So the double negative, this gigantic earthquake is, earthwork in Nevada is in the permanent collection of the Museum of Contemporary Art. And you don't want to know what happened at that board meeting when that was proposed to bring that into the collection. I mean, it was hand-to-hand combat to a certain degree. But it's this is the kind of risk-taking you have to do, and you do it on behalf of the artist, you do it on behalf of the collection, you do it on behalf of the future of that institution, and you do it because it can be a hell of a lot of fun to take these kind of risks.
And with that, it's 5 o'clock. I think we could go on for a lot longer.
Hope
but
that helps.
This has been an especially wonderful panel conversation because our panel grew in front of our very eyes from 4 to 8 people. Which so thank you all very much.